3 of A Conversation with Miss Gibb of the Grove Les Aires. Miss Gibb, did you know T.E. Brown?
Well, I knew him slightly, but of course we were young and rather beneath his notice, if you know what I mean. Cyril Payton and Edward and all these people. He really was very popular in the island. And he loved the Manx people. And he didn't regard their failings as failings, particularly with regard to the unwanted babies. I think he called them little blessings. And he was very lenient indeed to their any failings they might have.
And this would account for him not going to one single church, but going all around.
Yes, it didn't matter to him which church it was, and if they would go to church. And I think he used to try and emphasize that people should send their children to church of some kind, and he didn't mind if it was Presbyterian or Wesleyan or the Church of England, because he was a minister of the Church of England, but he would help any good cause, and he would go and speak, I think, on any platform in aid of any good cause, didn't matter.
And was he as great a man to the Manx people when he was alive as he is now?
I think he was. Of course they didn't have these memorial dinners or whatever they have, but if they could get him on to a platform for any good cause, he would go and speak, and people would go to hear him. If you said T.E. Brown was coming to the St. Paul's Tea Party, well, you would have an extra good attendance, because people would come to listen to him. Not that you needed in the early days an extra good attendance. The place was always well attended.
Did he have a nice voice?
I never knew her.
Did he have a nice voice?
Hmm?
Did he have a nice speaking voice?
Oh, very nice speaking voice, yes. Very. Very pleasant voice. A man's voice, not squeaky. Mm. But was a very pleasant voice.
And he lived Windsor Road or somewhere, did he?
Hmm?
Did he live in Windsor Road or...?
Yes, at the top of Windsor Road. The house had a placard on it where the various people that it's been bought and sold so many times lately that it's been taken off or not, I don't know. But it had on it, I think, T.E. Brown lived here for a certain number of years and died.
Mm.
And after he died, the two daughters, Dora and Edith, went to live in either Hove or Brighton or somewhere down there, because they had lived in the south of England in their youth. But of course he was headmaster of Clifton.
Yes, vice master.
That was it, yes.
Yes. Did you know any of the T.E. Brown characters, Miss Gibb?
Well, I don't really know. Of course, old Jackie Bellure was one. I suppose the water trough is gone too. He had a little cottage on the way up from the Bellure Bridge to the to Fulloo, between there. He'd a cottage above the road, and he delighted in birds, and when you went in, there were always birds. He had I don't know whether there was any glass in the window or not, but the birds came in and out, and they were twittering and flying round the room, and he was feeding them and looking after them and all the rest of it. And he was supposed to be the Hall Caine modelled somebody on him, but I never could find out quite who, because I think Jackie Bellure was much more after T.E. Brown's type of a person than Hall Caine's.
And you were saying there was someone in Craig Nish who was a T.E. Brown character too, whom you knew.
Yes. Well, this man, Neddy Amrai, he was a kind of Manx poet, I believe, in some kind of a way, but that was in the Manx language, and it wasn't poetry as we call it poetry. It was more poetry like the Psalms, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
I think Uncle Edward gave all the things he had that he knew about him or anything to the museum.
This is Uncle Edward Turnbull?
Yes.
Did he know Neddy Amrai?
Oh, yes.
How did he know him?
Well, for one thing, Uncle Edward owned the cottage that they lived in. How he came to that, I can't tell you. I expect the real owner perhaps wanted money, and Uncle Edward gave him the money and took the cottage, you see. You may be sure he gave him twice what the cottage was worth, knowing Uncle Edward. Because and any money he had, if people wanted to borrow money, he never asked them more than 2%. He was great on helping people.
He was your mother's brother, wasn't he?
Yes.
And your mother's mother was whom?
A Kelly, of Ballyquina. And Henry Kelly said to me quite lately, he said, you know, if my father hadn't been born at the tail end of all those girls, your grandmother would have come into Ballyquina. I said, well, I never knew that. And I said, of course she didn't, so it didn't matter.
Well, Henry Kelly, the lawyer, the advocate,
yes,
in Douglas.
Yes.
So his grandfather and your,
my grandmother were brother and sister.
Your Turnbull grandmother?
Yes. She was a Kelly.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And you see, there were a lot of those. There was a son at the beginning, and he died as a young, comparatively young man. John, I think his name was. And then there was Anne and Sarah and Esther. 1, 2, 3. And Emily, I think. Yes, Emily was Mrs. Washington, of course, Ida's grandmother. And there was the old Aunt Esther, lived in the Four Roads. And her brother, in the old days, the unmarried women were supposed to be supported by the owner of the farm, of their home, as it were, as long as they lived. They were supposed to have the right to live there, you see. But once the owner, the present Henry Kelly's grandfather, when he came into it and he married, they wouldn't have this, she was always old when I knew her, old lady living in the house, and she was put into a house in the Four Roads at Port St. Mary. But I don't think they gave her enough to live on. And I know when she died, the Uncle Henry said, oh, let the parish bury her. And Uncle Edward said, certainly not. I will see to that. And so he bought a new grave, and the old lady was buried there, and he was buried there himself. And
In Kirkrushen.
Mm.
Is your mother buried in Kirkrushen?
Mother's buried in another part, in the old churchyard, and these graves were in the, well, not the new one across the road, but the extension of the old one that was built along the same road as the church, same side, but going towards the three, what they call the three roads.
And your grandfather Turnbull buried there too?
He's buried in the old churchyard with a great big tombstone, and all the by his desire, all the names of his family are on it.
I'll go and look at it next time.
It's when you go in at the gate of Russian, you turn to the right, and it's almost against the road wall. William Turnbull and his wife Anne, and Aunt Emily, and I wonder if they. All their names are on, that's it, Uncle Henry. But Uncle Edward and Aunt Alice are both buried in the bit of extension with old Aunt Esther from Barraquina.
Your grandfather was very probably buried by my grandfather.
Very likely. Because, most likely.
Because my grandfather was vicar of Russian from about 1850. to 1870.
Well, I can't remember quite when Grandfather died. But it was later than that.
What was Ramsay like, Miss Gibb, when you were 12, 14, 15 and beginning to go down by yourself and so on?
Yes.
Where did the shops start? And are there any shops today that were there then?
Yes. Well, the chemist's shop opposite the courthouse was there then, Loughlin's. And I very often still call it Loughlin's because it's Loughlin the father and then Loughlin the son had it. And then the son had no children and he died and I suppose Stevenson took it over then, I don't know, but there's a little man Mills in it that I've known always. And then Bondi's shop had just been, it had been a small shop, and the new house, with the new shop with the house above it had just been built, now is Kizik's, Bart Aldous and Muckton's.
Who built that? Mr. Aldous?
No, there. What's his name? Bondi built it.
Bondi built it.
Yes. And he lived there and worked there. I think he died when the shop was still his. And then I think his wife had died before that. And the one girl married and went to London, and the other one married John Cleeter, and had a... They lived, I can't remember where they lived. But anyway, her daughter lives in Peel. She married a man somewhere in Peel. And then the Mitre was just the same, looks just the same as is now. And the gas place was the Isle of Man Bank. And where the Isle of Man Bank is, was a rather ramshackle-looking building with somebody sold fruit in it. And then there was Lay's shop, which had a top story, which was taken down for some reason or other. And the shoe shop. What was the shoe shop? I think the shoe shop was there. And then there were some small shops, and Kermode was just building, or had just built a new shop there, which had been quite a small building, like the little hairdresser and what's the other one? There are two small shops. Was Mrs. Waggett's.
There he is.
and those small shops were there. And Stead and Simpson's shoe shop was a small thing like those. And then on the other side of the street, the shops, the corner shop, which is toys and so on, was Betty's, an ironmonger's. That was a good-looking shop, just as it is now. And the next one to it, which is a bank, was a small thing, I think, where they sold sweets. And then the Courier was the same as it is now. And the fish shop was a myth, had a lisp, myth clickthpenth, we always called her.
Myth whom?
Clickthpenth, because she couldn't say sixpence. She said the thing with, if you asked her how much is that, clickthpenth. And she sold all sorts of quaint things, little china, tiny china plum pudding figures and birds' baths and all sorts of sixpenny things that children could buy. That's where Irving the, and it was just the same shop, and she lived behind and above it. A miss, now what was her name? Kane? Crane?
And then further down, it was Clegg's there, the ironmonger?
Yes, Clegg's was just the same. And the shop that was across the opening from Clegg's, that's, I think somebody said it's been taken for furniture,
yeah,
was Aaron and Topman's. Well, that had been built before my day by Dan Goldsmith, who started a very good grocery business. And at that time, there were a lot of people retired here, like Colonel Tellyson and General Brereton, from the various wars, and people who'd been abroad and liked foreign things, you know, curries and Bombay ducks and all these kind of things. And you couldn't buy them, they said, in Douglas, and the Douglas people used to come down to Allen and Tubman's, or to Dan Goldsmith's, as it was to begin with, but to become Allen and Tubman by my day, because Dan Goldsmith retired and built Riversdale.
Did he?
Yes.
He must have made some money then.
Oh, he did. He made quite a fortune for those days.
Mm.
I think both his sons got rid of it.
Well, dear. And Corkill's, the furniture shop, was that built?
I think there was a sweet shop this side of Clegg's, and then they pulled that down and they built those bigger, sort of big up buildings, and various people came into them. Well, Maud Crutch is there still, I think.
Mm.
And, I think
Cowley's looks a fairly old shop.
Hmm?
Cowley's looks a fairly old
yes,
shop.
Yes, that was there.
Was it?
I don't remember anything different
but
Cowley's building.
No. And then it gradually petered out, did it, into fields and things like that, was it?
Yes. And of course, a lot of them had quite good gardens at the back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one of the Starkeys had a house on the quay and a long narrow garden at the back of it, and he grew the most marvellous fruit. He'd wonderful fruit trees.
And Auckland Terrace, where Gordon Bell is.
Yes, well, that was the same always.
That was built, was it?
Yes, that was built. And the Albion Terrace on the Lizaire Road, and the small terrace is opposite it, but they ended with, Dr. Tellett, when I first remember him, was in the, what do they call it? The hotel at the corner of the Lizer Road.
Yes, indeed, in Parliament Square there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, my first party I went to there when I was about five, I think. I don't know, but I can quite remember the upstairs room, and Molly Nelson, who died afterwards, and various others of the small children, Marjorie and Dorothy Tellett, the two younger ones. I don't think, well, Lucy may have been in the nursery. I don't think Kitty was born. And then when Ramsay was being improved and so on, the commissioners, and it has a little bit of a garden in front of it even. You went, you know, just a bit, mm-hmm. like the houses in Lizer Road. A path and a bed each side under the windows, and a door onto the road. And old High Bailiff Tellett had always lived there, I believe. Mm-hmm. He was gone then, and Dr. Tellett was there with his wife, and then he was offered a good sum for it if he would, because they wanted to take the garden to widen the road at that part. And he sold it and bought the house at the end of Lizer Road, not the Albion Terrace side, the left-hand side as you go along. And then his relations, two old ladies, lived in, what's the name of the place? In the house with the garden, and that at the end, next, what was the Terrets? Old Miss, no. Old, two old Miss Crellins. They were some connection of John Crellins, I think, but they were also some connection of Dr. Tellett's. And Dr. Tellett really had Huguenot connections.
And what about Waterloo Road and Belleau Road?
Well, of course, Belleau Road was getting built. Those pinky houses and all that were being built, in the first Jubilee year. And the Belleau Mount facing the sea. I know the pinky houses were there when I first remember walking up that road to go and see Mrs. Allen at what was then Bellevue, I think. The man calls it Roselands or something now. Mm-hmm. We used to go there practically every week.
And the Beach Hotel, Queen's Hotel
area? Yes, the Queen's Hotel was built in, I don't know which Jubilee, but it was either between the two Jubilees or about that time, because the builder, now wait a minute, no, that man came home and bought it, I think. Can't think who the builder of the Queen's Hotel was. I know that a Mrs. Wilde, I think, ran it for a time. And she was a sister to the Mrs. Clark who ran the Mitre so successfully for many years. And then I think Mr. Neal came home from South Africa having done very well, and he bought it. And, of course, they ran it until comparatively recently.
And close by there, there was, what, one or more Manx cottages, were there not?
Yes.
White and thatched and all the rest?
Well, I don't actually remember the Manx cottages. I think they were pulled down when the hotel was built.
I see.
I fancy they were.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one, of course, still for a long time on the seaside of the road from them, just up a little bit, just beyond Washington House. Well, almost at the Beach Hotel, There was a thatch cottage still there for years.
And this you do remember?
Mm.
In the South Promenade, South Ramsey, I suppose, was much the same as it was when they demolished it.
Yes, just the same. One or two good houses and some rather poor ones, you know. There were one or two very nice houses. Dr. Rowe lived in one up towards the Queen's Hotel Inn there, where it's a little further back from the sea.
And in the harbour, the Iron Bridge was there, was it, when you were a girl?
Well, I can't remember really the harbour without it, and yet I seem to think I should do, because I can remember such a lot of talk about this swing bridge. And before the swing bridge was there, when Mr. Gibson ran the shipyard, he had a sort of platformy thing across, a little higher up than the swing bridge is now, for the workpeople from Ramsey to come to the shipyard without having to go round by the Stone Bridge and North Shore Road.
The same as there is in Peel Harbour, from the Peel side across to...
Yes, that kind of thing. To the castle.
What's that bay called?
Yes.
Just by the castle there.
Yes.
Yeah. You were telling me about the Grove here and how the amenities like water were really very late.
Yes.
In coming here.
Yes.
When did you get water laid on here?
Well, it's difficult to say the year exactly. If I could remember when Eric LeMote became high, bought Mona. Now wait a minute. You don't happen to know when the Rudds bought Riversdale?
Not offhand.
Well, Dr. Gell, I know, was very anxious that they should buy it. Well, when they bought Riversdale, all the 25 or 30 years that they had been in Myrtle Hill, they rented it, furnished. And, of course, the carpets were worn out and the remains of them put up into the loft when they bought new carpets and all that kind of thing. But really, when they went into Riversdale, they had to start kind of furnishing, and it was difficult to remember what had been in Myrtle Hill when they took it. And the owner, who'd forgotten he was a man, I think, who was a schoolmaster, but he put it up for sale when they left, and Eric LeMote bought it. And he brought the water from Grove Mount as far as Myrtle Hill, which wasn't very far to bring it, you see, and told Auntie that it would cost very little to take it across the road and up the field to the Grove, and that we would never then have to go down to the river in a drought when the well went dry. Auntie was very glad and got the water. And now, when would that be?
Was this before?
About 1813 or 14.
1913 or 14,
yes.
Just before the war.
Yes. Because we had the water. And I don't, I don't think we got the bath in the bathroom until 2021 or 20 or something like that.
Didn't you?
No. We had tin tubs and those, you know, those old-fashioned hip baths.
Yes.
Have you seen them?
Yes, of course I have.
Mm.
They used to be one of the trademarks on one of the soaps, weren't
yes.
they? And rather lovely things.
Yes.
And before then, you had what, a well?
Oh, yes, the well is still there, and the pump, but the pump has worn out, and really, we ought to have had it seen to before, long before now, because it makes that end of the kitchen damp. When I said to the mason, well, 2 or 3 years ago, when we were having the roofs of some of the buildings wanted the slates tightening, about the damp, and he said, yes, but it's ground damp, it's from that well that's underneath the, it's in the corner of the coal cellar. And of course, he said, it's, and you ought to have kept the pump going in order to pump the water out of it at intervals. It could have then gone down the drain, and you wouldn't have had this damp all in the kitchen.
And did the well give you enough water at all times, or did you have any supplementation?
As a rule, it was supplemented by a huge, well, I think it was like a kind of vat, a thing about as big as half this table and taller than me. It reached almost to the ceiling in the cellar. For rainwater, which came down there from the large tank on the roof, and that was always filled up, the lead pipe going down to it's there still. We've got a galvanized tank there now, and it was always filled up when there was plenty of rain, you see, and kept full so that there was plenty of water for the washing. And there was a huge lead tank on the roof. It held 500 gallons or more.
Mm.
It was a great big thing.
Also collecting rainwater.
Yes. Because you see, there's a large expanse of roof on this house.
Yes.
And besides that, there was another thing down by the greenhouse collecting rainwater there. Well, that's gone too. And the last barrel that we had is given out so that...
And when you cleaned your teeth in those days, did you have to boil the water first?
Well, we never did.
Never did?
No. The well water was used. It was delicious water, slightly limey, I believe, and it kind of sparkled. It was far better water to drink than what we get out of the tap nowadays.
Yes. Can we go back to the Turnbull ancestry? Your mother was a Miss Turnbull, yes?
Yes.
And when was she born?
Well, she was 79 when she died in 1931.
1931,
yes.
79. So you subtract 48, 1852.
Oh, yes.
And then her mother.
Yes.
Mrs. Granny Turnbull.
Yes.
Was a Miss Kelly.
From Ballaquina.
From Ballaquina.
Yes.
Did you know Granny Turnbull?
No, she died when her youngest child, our Aunt Alice, was only 12 years old. So mother was the eldest of the daughters. She took over the house and brought Aunt Alice up, you might almost say.
Mm-hmm.
But well, she was 12, I think, they said.
And so she looked after her father.
Yes.
And the other children? Or
yes.
Other
there child. Was Uncle Edward, And Aunt Emily, who was a very charming woman and charming to look at, and Uncle Henry, who was the Londoner, and Aunt Alice. And so the man who was afterwards Sir James Gerry, you know, had an office in Castletown, and Uncle Henry had taken a scholarship to King William's and really was very brilliant. And Sir James Gerry went to Grandfather and said, "I'd like to take your lad into my office. He'd just suit me." And Grandfather said, "Well, it's up to him. He's got a mind of his own." And the proposal was told to Uncle Henry. "No," he said, "I'm going to London." And I believe he did it all off his own bat. He got hold of somebody in connection with the London School Board and got a job there. And there he taught till he was past the age of teaching, really, but he carried on for several other years because he had a very good, whatever the method was, he had a very good method. He was a big man. He could always control a class of unruly boys. He never had any trouble with them, and they never wanted him to retire. Mm. But of course, at a certain time, he did give up.
Mm. And where did the Turnbull side originally come from?
From Northumberland. Grandfather's father or grandfather, I think it was his father, but I'm not sure, was brought over by one of the Dukes of Athol.
Oh, yes.
As foreman on the estates. And his father lived in a rather nice whitewashed house at the corner of the four roads as you come up from Port St. Mary. It was on the right-hand side, but I think it's been demolished. Mm-hmm. But I know Grandfather said he was born there. And there was one of those runic slabs outside the just outside the gate, against the wall. And they wanted to remove it, before my day, I think. Grandfather refused to let it go, but in the end it went.
Mm. Where is it now?
I suppose it will be either some at Russian or are they all taken to Castletown?
I think more likely to be in Russian than in Castletown.
I'm not sure. I can't remember seeing them in Russian.
No.
That's the thing.
Mm. And your grandfather's shop in Port Erin, where was that? And
yes.
Is it still there?
Well, he started that, you see. He bought the land, I suppose, for he himself was, now what did he say? He himself trained as a joiner.
Mm-hmm.
And very good joiner he was. Awfully faddy. On one occasion, something, I don't know what went wrong, but anyhow, Uncle Edward hammered it up, and Uncle Edward and Grandfather said, "That won't do. He doesn't know how to hold a hammer." I just remember that bit of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what went wrong, but he was awfully faddy. But my word, he was good to us, and Will never missed Father. Grandfather was so good to him.
Mm. And where was the shop? Where was the shop? Whereabouts in Port Erin?
It's faces the sea on the down on the lower part. You cross the road and you're on the shore. And For a long time, it was the only shop in the place.
Mm.
And then they got the, they were asked if they would take us some post office, because Port Erin was getting bigger, and they did. And my Aunt Alice, terribly interested in that, she loved the work for that, and she was, oh, I many a time watched her sending telegrams with the telegram in one hand and this key, dot and a dash, in the other hand, mm-hmm. and she could read the message that came in just as quickly.
Mm-hmm. And is the shop still a shop?
Yes. People called Quirk have it.
Quirk?
Mm. Uncle Edward sold it afterwards.
Is it called Quirk now?
I think they very often say, the older people say, go along to Turnbull's.
Do they?
Yes.
Mm, I must go and have a look at it the next time I'm in Port Erin.
And there's a sort of, it's a fairly tall house, but there's a sort of extra piece built on in the front. And that piece was built on for the post office.
I see. Another question that I wanted to ask you, Miss Gibb, is where is your father buried?
Russian churchyard.
Your father also in
yes.
Russian?
Yes.
With the Turnbull grave?
No, alongside it. There was a vacant plot alongside.
Mm-hmm.
And he and mother are there.
I see. But next door to the Turnbull?
Yes. Grandfather's is a big plot, you know, because mm-hmm. I suppose he envisions of most of the family. Well, his wife and grandfather and Aunt Emily. Oh, yes, that's all, mm-hmm. because Uncle Edward insisted on having a new grave to himself.
Yes.
He and Aunt Alice are in the passageway down from the old churchyard to where you go across the road to the new. But they're not in the new, they're in the sort of extension of the old.
Mm.
And then Will is in the new. And grandfather and mother and one or two others are buried just on the right-hand side of the gate as you go in. I think there was a little building there at one time that was used as a Sunday school. And then it was cleared away when the schools further down the road were built. And the Sunday school, I think, was held there. And then, of course, when Port Erin Church was built and Port St. Mary, there weren't scholars for the parish church Sunday school. It was too much in the middle of the sort of farming bits of the parish,
mm.
and the ports had grown bigger.
Mm. You were telling me the other day, about a month ago, about how you were on the Fenella when at the time when the Ellen Vannin went
yes.
down in 1911.
Yes.
Would you care to tell me the story again?
Well, no, I wouldn't mind. Well, in Scotland, of course, I was staying in Edinburgh at the time with the cousins. They had a very nice house in the country near North Berwick, where Jimmy's father had farmed, and Jimmy kept it on.
This is Scott Reed, is it?
Yes, and they grew seed wheat for Canada in those days. I remember Brown telling me, Brown was the grieve. And Jimmy carried on. He was a lawyer, a WS. And I was staying with them in Edinburgh. I'd been at Drem, and I'd come into the house they took for 4 months in the winter in those days. Because the boys were going to school. And they didn't know what to do about letting me go home, because, of course, We all knew of the Ellen Vannin disaster. And anyhow, it was decided that the journey to Liverpool was too long and I might meet just as bad a storm when we got down there. And so I left for Glasgow and got on to the Ellen Vannin.
Onto the Fenella.
Onto the Fenella, I mean. And the stewardess said to me, "Oh," she said, "Miss Jennett, we're going to have a bad night. We're going to have a very bad night. Not a bit good." I said, "Well, I'm here," I said, "I can't go back again." And we started. Well, it wasn't so bad coming down the Clyde, but once we got out into the sea, my word, we did have a bad night. I can remember quite well lying in that berth, and one minute I'd be nearly standing, and the next minute I'd be lying down and my feet would be up. And she was sitting, I can't remember anybody else in that lady's cabin, but I dare say there was another person, but somehow I don't think there was. And she sat beside me and moaned and groaned all the way through. "Oh, we're going to the bottom. Oh, isn't it awful? Oh, we'll never get there." Well, I think I was too, generally I'm sick on board. And in those days they didn't give you pills to keep you from being sick. And I was too frightened to be sick, I think. Anyhow, I thought to myself, well, this is the end of it, it is, and we can't do anything, because we were battened down for fear of a flood of water coming over us and getting down like it did in the Ellen Vannin, because she was pooped. And on we went. "We'll never see Ramsay again," she said. "We'll never see Ramsay again." And one of the sailors came in, and she said, "Where are we, Tom?" He said, "I think we're off the Point of Ayre." Oh, "Do you mean to say we've got this far?" "Yes, we have." "Oh," she said. She cheered up a bit after that. "Can you see Ramsay?" "Oh, no," he said. "We won't go anywhere near the bank. We'll be keeping well out." And of course, we didn't see Ramsay. And the coast guards that were watching for the boat said, "I'm afraid she's gone." And, oh, Mr. Bell and all of them, they were all, what news could they get of the boat? And they telegraphed to, I don't think we had the telephone in those days, they telegraphed to Glasgow and found the boat left at the usual time, expecting a bad passage. And nothing had been heard of her. And they telegraphed up to Douglas. Had they any news of the boat? No, but she was bound to be late with such a storm. And they apparently, and Mr. Bell said, they promised to telegraph down to Ramsay if she came into the harbour, which they did. Of course, we were very late, and it was snowing and sort of sleet and a howling gale. However, the train was blocked at, what's the place it always does get blocked? Doesn't matter.
And Beale Road to somewhere.
Somewhere there. What is the name? And they didn't know whether the electric car would get to Ramsay or not, but there was more chance of it getting to Ramsay because, you see, it was along the coast. It did get to Ramsay. I came by that. And they were all too, I don't know what they did. We didn't have any breakfast, but it was, well, it must have been getting on to midday when we got into Ramsay.
Yes, to Douglas. Mm. Do you remember the date? The Ellen Vannin went down, I think, on the 29th of November, 1911.
Well, then this must have been about the 11th of December, I think.
I see, about 2 weeks later.
Yes.
Hmm.
Because, you see, all the whiskey and that kind of thing that came from Scotland to the island, they all came on those little boats, the Ellen Vannin and the Fenella.
But was the Ellen Vannin sunk on the way from Glasgow to the Isle of Man or Liverpool to the Isle of Man?
Going from the Isle of Man to Liverpool.
Going from the Isle of Man to Liverpool.
Yes. And the Mr. Bell said to the captain, "It's an awful night, will you go? Why not let us ring up, telegraph. They may have been ringing up anyway. Why not let us get hold of Douglas and see what they have to say?" Well, they rang up the offices in Douglas, but they were shut. People had all gone home, you see. And the captain, he was a man named Tier, I think. He was the youngest captain in the fleet. And he said, "No, I won't try and get hold of them, because they could have the sense to stop me if they chose. And I'd already been called over the coals on one occasion for not going when they thought I should have gone. And I'm going." And Mr. Bell said, "Well, I don't like it. I don't like it." And that was Mr. Bell that told that afterwards.
She sailed from Ramsey, the Ellen Vannin.
Yes, she sailed from Ramsey to Liverpool that night. And I know that, what was his name? Johnson, who married Mabel Nash. The leave was up, and she wasn't going back to India with him. She was going to stay here with the children till his next leave. He was in the Indian Civil Service. And Winnie said this, her sister who was staying with them. And he said, "Oh, Mabel, won't you come with me to see the last of me?" When it was such a bad night, and she wasn't a good sailor, and she said to him she thought she wouldn't go. "I don't think I can face it," she said. And he said this. So she took her sleeping draught, I think, when she got on board or something, and went. And of course they both went down with the ship.
Was there anybody saved at all?
No, I don't think anyone. You see, in the inquiry afterwards, they said it was an error of judgment with that little boat to cross the bar at that time. If they'd gone up the coast or down the coast for an hour or two, till high water was over, they would have been all right. But she was a little boat that always went along like that. The front was up and the back was a bit down, and she was pooped. When the divers and that went down, that was what had happened. The following sea at the bar just come over and put her right down.
It was at the Mersey Bar?
Yes. She was just on the Liverpool side of the bar, you see. It would sort of drive her forward and drive her down. It was an awful disaster.
How many people went down with her? 30 or 60 or...?
I don't suppose more than 30. I know there was a man from Andreas named Quayle.
He is mentioned in my mother's diary.
Yes. And he was in one of the rectory cottages.
That's right.
And there was a man from Ramsey named Shimon. And funnily enough, both Shimon's boys, I think Shimon was one of the sailors, both Shimon's boys went to sea. Jimmy, the younger one, was lost in a submarine in the First World War, it would be, and William survived both wars and is retired in Ramsey nowadays.